to get started, do you kind of want to lay the groundwork for why Labor Day is always important?
Yes, I think Labor Day is always important because it's a holiday that celebrates the efforts of workers, all workers. And oftentimes people think of, when they think of workers, if I put it in quotation marks, they only think of, you know, blue collar workers or industrial workers. But as our manufacturing base has declined, and in terms of, as there's been a shift to service workers, workers and a movement to white-collar workers, everybody's a worker, whether you work manually with your hands like the blue-collar workers do, or white-collar workers with your brain. So it's a holiday that celebrates the contributions of all workers, regardless of whether you're a blue-collar worker or a white-collar worker, or, you know, there's another category, which would be kind of a subset of the white-collar workers, like secretaries, et cetera, which have been historically heavily female, which are called pink-collar workers. So regardless of the color of your collar, if you're a worker, Labor Day is the holiday which celebrates your efforts and contributions to the economy.
Sure. And so we've kind of heard about this new brand of employee during the COVID-19 pandemic, that being the emergence of the essential worker.
Yes.
Which, you know, there are some kind of more highbrow jobs included in that with some healthcare workers, but it's largely more blue collar. So retail workers, people doing sanitation, essential services that we need just to get through our everyday lives. And we've seen them celebrated in a very kind of specific way. So a lot of things on social media, sometimes you'll see the banners of essential workers work here on a Walmart or whatever. I guess I just wonder if that's kind of sufficient praise, or if there's a bigger opportunity for us to kind of rethink what kind of jobs are important.
Yeah. Well, I think the issue is, and if you think about essential workers in different contexts, in a labor relations context, for instance, historically, essential workers have been considered workers that deal with public safety issues, like policemen and firefighters, et cetera, and specifically around the debate if all public sector workers should have the right to strike. And there's been the argument, well, we can't give all governmental workers the right to strike because certain workers are essential, such as policemen, firemen, et cetera, who have been responsible for safety. But I think, you know, the point in terms of essential workers is that all workers are essential. There wouldn't be a job per se if they weren't making a significant contribution to society. So depending on what you need and when you need it, any worker is an essential worker, and that all labor has dignity. And that's not something that I came up with myself. That's something Martin Luther King said, that basically, regardless of what you do, whether you're a highly skilled worker, whether you're a semi-skilled worker, whether you're an unskilled worker, you're making contributions to society. And so certainly, for instance, in the middle of the summer, if it's really hot and there's a lot of garbage that's around and it's starting to smell and it's attracting various kinds of insects, etc., garbage men are essential workers because you want to remove those kind of hazards and those kinds of dangers. So I think that this idea of essential worker kind of changes depending on the context and the time.
Yeah, and this is kind of speculative, but I guess I'm curious if you think that this kind of celebration of people and jobs that we aren't typically celebrating will persist past the pandemic. So are people going to be eternally grateful to their grocery store clerk after this experience that we've all had?
You know, that's an excellent question. And, you know, that's something that's really hard for me to say. I think maybe the longer the pandemic goes on, the more something like that would be ingrained in somebody's mind. But that's something that's really hard to say in terms of when things go back to, and I put this in quotes, you know, to a normal, right? Or, you know, a new normal, if these workers will still be celebrated in the the same way that they have been now. And certainly, I mean, they're considered, they're celebrated now because they're out there working every day during the pandemic. And, you know, some were even working longer shifts than they historically did. And, you know, not necessarily for higher wages, but for the same wages that they were getting and the same benefits. So, but I think it just shows that, you know, how the whole economy is integrated in that everybody who has a job is making a contribution to the economy.
Yeah, and I think it's worth touching, too, on people who don't have jobs right now, because there are a lot of them. The jobless claims are still incredibly high. Do you want to kind of touch on how that should factor into our conversations around Labor Day?
Yeah, so I mean, certainly you're right in terms of, you know, the higher level of the unemployment rate. And, you know, today is the first Friday of the month, so the Bureau of Labor Statistics releases the official unemployment rate, which, and it's gone down in terms of it's 8.4%. So it's gone down from the month before. That's still high. And if you compare this before the pre-COVID, you know, we were at basically, you know, a 50-year low of somewhere, you know, less than half of that, you know, under 4% or around 4% nationwide. So there are still a lot of workers who are unemployed who have lost their jobs because of this. And so it is a hard time. It is a hard time for them. And, you know, if you're aware in terms of Trump, just extended that there can't be any evictions till the end of the year because the unemployment rate is high. People aren't all back to work at this time. And of course, the stimulus money has ended too, right? They're still debating that in Congress in terms of what the level of that is. So 8.4%, which is the official unemployment rate, that's the U3 rate, is still very high. It's not as high as it was at the peak of the Great Recession in October 2009, where it was 10.1, even though last month it was, you know, it was double digits, so it was over that, so it's come down now. But I think a more accurate unemployment rate, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics tracks different unemployment rates. And so while the U3 is the official unemployment rate, I always look at the U6 unemployment rate and what the U6 unemployment rate is. It includes the officially unemployed workers, the discouraged workers, and discouraged workers would be those workers who want a job but have given up looking for a job because they believe no job is available, but if offered a job would take a job, as well as workers who are involuntary part-time workers who are only working part-time because they can't get a full-time job. And you could be an involuntary part-time worker and still be considered to be employed if you're working at least 1 hour a week for wages, at least for minimum wages. So if you look at the U6 unemployment rate, which I think is a more accurate indicator of the true unemployment rate, that's currently, and that's come down too, but that's at 14.2. So so that indicates probably about approximately one out of seven workers, if you look at the U6 rate, would be unemployed at this time. And if you compare that historically, let's say, to a year ago in August 2019, at the time the U6 rate was probably around 7.2-7.4%. So it's almost double that.
Yeah. And then one thing that I think we're always kind of bad about in the United States is work-life balance.
Yes.
But with so many people working from home and then also, you know, dealing with childcare now that many schools aren't open and attempting to be a teacher and a parent at the same time, potentially caring for loved ones, and also just dealing with the stress of being in the middle of a global pandemic.
Right.
It's a lot. So I guess how should people kind of think about the value of their work as they're working from home and work to establish that balance?
Yeah, so, you know, that's an excellent question. And you're certainly right in terms of, I mean, historically, it's been easier to separate work life from family life. For instance, if you work in a steel mill and then you come home from the steel mill, you can't produce steel in your backyard or in your living room, et cetera, right? So there was a clear separation between work life and family life to some degree in that sense. But now you're right in terms of there are more demands. It's even harder in terms of working from home because you have more pressure. You have to make sure your kids are online through, in terms of following their lessons, right? Monitoring them, helping them, right? And in terms of just with our technology now, people can be contacted, you know, in a sense, any time of the day or night. Not that necessarily somebody's going to be contacted at 3 a.m. through an email or through their cell phone, but I think there's a lot more pressure. And also, in some sense, even though you still have to keep, you're doing more work and you might have more childcare responsibilities, you might also have to be caring for elderly parents now at home because of the pandemic. So there's a lot more pressure on people, and you're not seeing your colleagues at work like you used to. So in some sense, it could feel more isolating as well. You're working harder and it's more isolating, and you might feel that you're constantly working and you really don't have a period of time where you can get away from these child care responsibilities, elder care responsibilities, or your responsibilities at work. So it is a lot of pressure at this time. And of course, certainly just worrying about what's going to happen and how long the pandemic's going to last.
Yeah. Is there anything that workers can kind of keep in mind to advocate for themselves with their employer, as you just mentioned a number of issues that they may be experiencing if they're feeling overwhelmed or not feeling safe coming into work, those kinds of things? How do they approach those conversations with their employers?
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's certainly hard to do that. I mean, in terms of, you know, a certain segment of the workforce, that certainly can be done through labor organizations, through the unions that represent them. But sometimes as individuals, that's a more difficult conversation to have. And I've read in terms of some situations where employers, you know, somehow feel, oh, well, people are working from home now, so, you know, they don't have to travel into work. They could save time that way. But they have, and I'm not saying all employers, but sometimes some employers have some unrealistic expectations. Like if I send an email to you, it needs to be answered within a short period of time. Or if I call you, you need to get back to me within a certain amount of time. And you know, people have many things going on because it's not that they're just working from home, but they're supervising children, might be taking care, as I said, of you know, sick relatives or sick parents. So these conversations can be hard as individuals to raise with their managers and supervisors. And because of the relatively high level of unemployment, people who are employed might just feel fortunate to have a job at this time and that they're still getting a paycheck and that they can still pay for their food and rent, considering that the demand on food banks is a lot higher and the potential for people to lose apartments or homes. I heard somewhere, you know, could be in the range of 30 to 40 million once the end of the year eviction, that Trump signed, not allowing evictions once that expires. So people who have jobs might feel also at this time, I'm lucky to have a job and, you know, I shouldn't really complain about some of these things, even though they have legitimate things to complain about.